Speaking today with Jeff Weems, who is a Democratic candidate for Railroad Commissioner here in Texas. Jeff, first question I'd like to ask is why you're running for this office.
I'm running for this office because the Railroad Commission has been mismanaged by the Railroad Commissioners for decades now. It's the agency in Texas that regulates oil and gas drilling, production, and transportation. And the folks who are running the commission, the three commissioners, they don't understand the oil and gas industry. They're not from the industry. If you don't know what you're regulating, you don't know how to regulate it. And that is the Railroad Commission's primary job, is to make sure that the drilling and production that's going on in the state of Texas is being done in a safe manner and in a manner that still creates jobs. It's our biggest industry in the state, so we got to keep it strong. But we saw what happened offshore when you have regulation that's not really doing its job, when it's a more lip service than actual supervision and watching over what's happening, you have catastrophes, and we have to start taking those steps now to avert those catastrophes in Texas.
Okay. As you mentioned, the Railroad Commission is really more of an energy commission, and in fact, though it was originally set up to regulate the railroads, it officially lost that function in 2005 through an act of the legislature. Since then, there's been a couple of attempts, or at least some discussion, about renaming the commission to more accurately reflect what it does.
Yes.
What is your belief about that?
I support the renaming.
And what do you think it should be called?
It should be called the Oil and Gas Commission, because it does nothing with wind, nothing with solar, nothing with nuclear.
Should it do something with those things?
Yes. And I'll answer that question next. It does nothing with anything except oil and gas, except for surface mine permitting for uranium and coal. And then it also is in charge of the initial exploratory wells done for uranium in situ mining. And so since 90-95% of what they do is oil and gas regulation, let's call it what it does. Because frankly, the name Energy Commission would be just as confusing and misleading and inappropriate as Oil and Gas Commission. Now, should it have more authority? Yes, especially with wind and solar. In wind and solar right now, the development of it, the production, if you would, where they're setting up the wind turbines and all, it's really cowboy country. There's no regulation of that. No one is responsible for regulating, and no one regulates it. Now, once the power is turned into electricity, the Public Utilities Commission steps in and does the grid and responsible for that. But placing the wind turbines out there, it's done completely on a handshake and hoping for the best. There are a lot of similar issues between oil and gas drilling and placement of wind turbines, for example, that deal with correlative rights between landowners, neighbors, what the Railroad Commission has learned through its 120 years of existence would apply very quickly and very easily and very appropriately over there. So yes, there should be some oversight of the wind and solar areas done by the Railroad Commission.
Now, wouldn't that overlap somewhat with the mission of the Land Commissioner as well?
Well, the Land Commissioner is more in the line of encouraging the development of it, of signing leases of state lands or on the state waters, as Hector Uribe has spoken of numerous times, that immediate offshore Texas. And they sign the leases. They get set up and authorize a permit. But as far as for placement, spacing, distancing, the safe operations in erecting and putting these things together, that is something that the Railroad Commission is in charge of right now with oil and gas, and their knowledge and expertise would fit and blend very well with that as it relates to wind and solar.
Now, as far as the regulation goes, I mean, I don't know if you've read this month's Texas Monthly, but Paul Burka has advocated as a budget savings mean of abolishing the Railroad Commission on the grounds that for the money it spends, it's not really serving a sufficient purpose. He talks about how, there's two items that he singles out. One is some $13 million for promotion of oil and gas interests, and $29 million for the inspections. But he says there's fewer than 100 inspectors and more than 100,000 wells. So, you know, how does that math work out?
The last thing you want to do is eliminate inspection, because that's what happened offshore. And are there enough field inspectors at the commission right now? Absolutely not. Do I fault our current commissioners? Absolutely. They've been going in front of the legislature time and time again with budget cuts, showing what good fiscal conservatives they are by cutting their own budget and not providing, not fighting for their workers in the field. And as I've gone and talked to the field directors, to the district directors, they have been screaming for more money and for more people to actually do the full job that needs to be done and hasn't been done. I think Paul's approach was novel and is one of the more dangerous proposals I have ever heard. And I think Paul has a streak in him that is very much in favor of the environment. And so I can't see how in seriousness he would really propose eliminating the highest elected environmental agency in Texas. Well, he proposed that for the TCEQ, but that's not elected. It has no one elected on the TCEQ.
Well, his argument there was that the EPA may as well take it over anyway.
The last thing you want in Texas is the EPA taking it over, because the EPA is structured to where they come up with regulation. They come up with guidelines and regulations, and then they rely on state agencies to implement it, and they help fund it too. They send a fair amount of money to the TCEQ, a little bit to the Railroad Commission for funding their mandates that they put on the states. That would be a horrible result if we were to eliminate the TCEQ and the Railroad Commission. And I'll just speak to the Railroad Commission right now. And the Railroad Commission performs a critical, critical function. If you go up around Fort Worth right now, where there's drilling in the city, where there's drilling in the county, right next to people's houses, right next to schools and daycares, and people are concerned about benzene in the air, and they're concerned about their water quality. If there is no regulation of this, or if you're going to somehow rely on the EPA to do it, when we have as big a budget crunch federally as we do on a local basis, you are absolutely calling for an unmitigated environmental disaster throughout the state of Texas. And you're going to cost tremendous numbers of jobs, because without regulation, because the Railroad Commission also says how far away you have to be from lease lines. They do a lot of the management of orderly development of reservoirs around the state. If they're gone and no one is doing that, because there's no one to, EPA wouldn't step in to do that. If there's no one to do that, you would have utter chaos in this state, and you'd probably cost hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of jobs.
Okay, fair enough. But you know, given that we have a budget crunch, how can you justify to the legislature the need to spend more money on more inspectors?
Do it internally first. Let's finish the automation process. The Railroad Commission has been doing this very fits and spurts, very cumbersome process of automating its systems. It needs to speed that process up. Bring in someone who's not the buddies of the elected officials to do this changeover into automation. That way, what you can do then is you can start within the current budget as it exists now, you can start getting a lot of your clerical personnel whose main job is to transcribe what's been handwritten and turned in by hand by the operators and by the other people who do business at the commission. Let's get that funding, that money, and start pointing it over toward hiring more field inspectors. Let's talk to all the people who have left the commission in the last couple of years. The attrition rate at the Railroad Commission has been atrocious, primarily because of the utter lack of leadership from our commissioners. Let's talk to some of those folks and get them back in. And you can probably get them back in at a good price too. They have the knowledge. They're able to accomplish so much in such little amounts in much less time than bringing in someone raw and new who has to be trained. Let's lead by example. Currently, each railroad commissioner is allotted 4 staff persons, a chief of staff, a head attorney, and then a couple more staff people. Let's cut that down to 2. I'll say right away, I'll cut it down to 2. I don't need a lawyer. I'll be my own lawyer. I think I know oil and gas law probably better than most folks do. I'm not the best. I emulate Ernest Thompson, who was a railroad commissioner for 32 years, and while he was a commissioner, he also wrote the body of oil and gas law in the state of Texas. He was a brilliant, brilliant man. I want to be like him. I'll never be him. But let's cut. If you're a commissioner and you're going to be cutting your budget and cutting your staff and cutting people back, you cut yourself and you cut your own staff first. That's you look internally and then start looking to cut others. So, for number one, let's set it up where the Railroad Commission The commissioners reduce their personal staffs as allowed by their own internal budgets. Number two, let's finish up this automation process so we can start diverting money from internal clerical staff. Let's get those clerks and train them for field personnel. Let's get that. I'm not necessarily looking at letting people go, but let's put them where we need people, is in the field. Let's also look at having the Railroad Commission be able to retain some of the fines it collects. Fees get swept by the state. Currently, everything the Railroad Commission generates gets swept by the state of Texas into their general revenue fund. Let's let the Railroad Commission, let's encourage them to enforce their rules and regulations. So if they levy a fine or a penalty, let the Railroad Commission keep that. And that will help encourage and enhance the enforcement aspect of the Railroad Commission.
So how many inspectors should the Railroad Commission have?
I don't know that you can say a specific number. Right now, I believe as far as active field inspectors, they have 86, which breaks down to about one in every 4,500 facilities that needs to be inspected on a regular basis, and you can't do that job. So I would urge that we push to at least, everything is a gradual process. You can't do anything immediately and right away. But there are inspections being done. There are penalties being handed out. There is good being done by our current inspection staff. The field workers at the Railroad Commission are outstanding. If they were to leave and go into private industry, they would, in many cases, double or more their pay. But they stay at the commission. They're dedicated workers. They don't have any leadership. The commissioners aren't leading, and that's where the issue is. That's where the biggest problem is. I would encourage that we double this field inspector staff and have that as a goal. You can't do that right away. As you say, the budget doesn't allow it. And I'm a realist when it comes to budget issues. I'm the administrative partner at my law firm. We have to meet payroll twice a month here. And I'm accustomed to that. And if you don't have the money, you don't have the money. But the way we do it here at the firm, if the money's short, we don't borrow. We take cuts among the partners first. And then make sure that you take care of your folks, your workers first.
Are there any other items within the existing Railroad Commission budget that you would look to say these resources are not allocated optimally and should be used towards something else like more inspectors?
They have a very successful program right now, the Alternative Fuels Research and Education Department. It's the Hank Hill guy, the propane guys. Right. When a school bus fleet converts to propane, they write them a subsidy check. It's a good program, it's a great program, but we need to suspend that program right now. Because it's a matter of when you're in scarce resources, that type of promotional approach is something that has to be put to the side for now. So that's another source of money. It's not a huge source of money, but that is another source of money that needs to be focused upon by the commission. If you really start trimming the internal staff at the commission, at the Railroad Commission, start trimming the number of attorneys inside the law section there, and you start doing an across-the-board trim as far as staff, in order to cut your field inspectors last and then re-divert money from, as you've increased your automation process, and re-divert that clerical money into the commission, I think you're getting very close to where the Railroad Commission needs to be on its budget on this ongoing basis. And then I think and I hope we're at the bottom and the valley of the state revenues coming in. And then as the commission budget builds down in the future, then we focus it on additional field inspectors. But let's also change this philosophy of that the Railroad Commission, since it has criminal enforcement authority, it could actually throw people in jail. It's one of the few agencies that has that authority in Texas. But with the Railroad Commission, let's get it to where it retains and it's allowed to keep for its own purposes, inside of its own budgetary authority, of course, but it keeps the money it generates in fines and penalties.
Okay. You've been quite critical so far of the job the commissioners have done. The thing that I generally hear, or you read about, is that the commissioners haven't done a good job of being responsive to public complaints about things. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yes, they're absolutely not. I got involved in this race when I had clients some small operators, some landowners, and others who I don't practice at the commission, but my clients are involved with things that go on at the commission, and they come in my office and say, Jeff, these folks are killing us on the commission. The commissioners, they don't know what they're doing. They think that by doing nothing, it helps us out, and that's the worst thing that could happen, because then you start getting evulsive policies by some areas. For example, the city of Flower Mound instituted a drilling moratorium. They shut it down. If you're inside the city or the ETJ of Flower Mound, Texas, they shut it all down. And they just recently extended it. I think that's a bad approach. I think if you have active railroad commissioners who are actually out there looking and doing things and listening to people and their complaints, you can solve a lot of problems by listening. And when I started looking into it, as people started raising this question in my office, I started looking around. I saw that Victor Correa, the gentleman against whom I thought I would be running, he in 2007 was named as a liaison between the Railroad Commission and the Barnett Shale communities, where they're having all that intense drilling near Fort Worth. He hardly ever went up there. There was no record of him going up and holding town halls, public forums, listening to people. I've been up there during the campaign 40 days and been out listening. I'm talking to Republican county commissioners. What do you like? What do you not like? Where could you see improvement? What could be done? What could the Railroad Commission do? That type of listening is critical in this, because people, quite frankly, in many respects, are scared. All of a sudden, they wake up and there's a derrick mast next door to their house. And it's 600 feet away, and it's run 24 hours a day. And their kids used to play in the streets, but now there's heavy equipment going up and down the streets. And so they're worried about it. You have to enhance that accountability and that communication between the commissioners and the people in the field. And I'll give you another great example. In the mid-2000s, it may have been even the early 2000s, I think this one was in Wise County, they permitted a saltwater injection well, which is an injection well, that's the type that the Railroad Commission approves when it's oil and gas waste. TCQ approves them if it's industrial or municipal waste. And when the Railroad Commission has been given a legislative grant of authority to approve these wells, and what it looks at is it says you're supposed to consider whether the well is in the public interest. And it approved this well. It refused to take into account local traffic patterns, local safety, local environmental. It took nothing else into account. It said, we view public interest as whether this is good for the oil and gas industry. And their whole inquiry stopped there. Well, they approved the well. There's a big traffic accident shortly afterwards. And a lot of people say, we've told you so a million times. That approval went to the district court in Travis County. Now, if a Railroad Commission decision goes to the district court gives great weight and deference to the Railroad Commission. All the court system does, because it's an administrative body determination. They approved it. It went up to the Court of Appeals. The Austin Court of Appeals reversed it, and they shot it down. They said, no, don't be so myopic. Take into account, listen to the people, kind of where your question had started off with, listen to the people, take into account traffic patterns and public safety concerns and other matters. The Railroad Commission has now appealed that decision to the Texas Supreme Court, and although that case is pending in front of the Supreme Court, there have been more applications that have gone in front of the commission since then. Railroad Commission has approved everyone with that same old myopic view, even though the law of the land right now is that they're supposed to take more things into account. It doesn't take much to take those into account. The commissioner's rationale for that is, well, we're not experts on traffic. Well, I try cases down at the courthouse all the time, and my judges and juries aren't experts on downhole tool performance or whatever my lawsuit happens to be about. But you have expert witnesses. You present the testimony and let them decide. They're a decider of fact. We're not asking for railroad commissioners to be experts on something. So that is just endemic of the problem, that the railroad commissioners don't listen to people and don't listen to the actual complaints and concerns of folks that are being affected and impacted by oil and gas process.
Now, I forgive my ignorance of how the commission works, but there's three commissioners. When they have to approve something, is it like majority rule, or does it have to be unanimous? I mean, no. I guess what I'm getting at is there will be two Republican commissioners and you if you're elected, and if you're the only one that's disagreeing with these things, what effect would that have?
Well, that's true. First, let me say, there are three commissioners, and it's 2-1 majority rules on their decisions. when a dispute comes in front of the Railroad Commission, it goes to a hearings examiner or an administrative law judge. They act like the trial court. They take evidence, hear the testimony, put it together, and make a decision. They put that decision in a proposal for decision and send it up to the three-member body of railroad commissioners who then make the decision. A lot of people don't realize Michael Williams and Elizabeth Jones, who are the commissioners who will remain on the commission after this election cycle, they disagree often. A lot. So that's a one-to-one split that's out there right now. And some of it on some really critical issues for the oil and gas industry, for the actual development and further development of our resources, especially these shales that they're developing so vigorously right now around the state. And so whoever gets elected will come in as that deciding vote right then and there. And there's a lot of very, very critical issues that are in front of the commission where you see a Michael Williams, Elizabeth Jones one-to-one split. On top of that, though, I try cases all over the state. I am accustomed to persuasion, and I'm not always successful. I'm the first to admit that. But you learn that the art of persuasion is based upon, first and foremost, listening. And so I would like to get in a matter that might be something where initially it starts off two votes one way and me the other way. Listen to what they're saying. Listen to the points that are being made and see if I have a differing view from the other two commissioners and work on persuasion. Work on seeing if I can get someone to see what my rationale is. Because my rationale is I'm in favor of the oil and gas industry. I want a strong and viable oil and gas industry in this state. If the oil and gas industry crumbles in this state, we haven't seen nearly the budget crunch that we're going to see. You have to regulate them, though. You have to watch over them. You have to do it both. And so it takes a lot of work. You can't do that when you're running for Senate, like Michael and Elizabeth are both doing. They're never in Austin to speak up. They're not doing their jobs like we hired them to do when we elected them. So a lot of that is the art of persuasion, and a big part of that again is listening to what people have to say and what their concerns are.
You've mentioned shales and Barnett Shale in particular. That's a very contentious situation, and again, I'm not completely up on this, but I understand it has, you know. They talk about fracking, hydrofracturing, which I believe has to do with injecting water into the ground to help drill oil out of there. And forgive my ignorance. Talk to me a little bit about what's going on with the Barnett Shale and what, if anything, should be done differently than what's going on now.
Boy, we may have to get another recorder and for more time on this.
All right.
I'll give you a very quick primer. When they drill these wells, they're drilling them horizontally. So they'll drill down vertically, then they'll turn it sideways, and then drill horizontally, sometimes for up to a mile. They'll then case the hole, put steel pipe down the entire hole, and cement it in place. And part of that process will protect the freshwater aquifer up there, up near the surface. Now, the Barnett Shale typically produces at about 8,500 feet. Your freshwater aquifer is at 500 feet. Once you set that steel pipe in place, they go and shoot holes in it in stages. They do a little segment, and then they move it back up the well. And shoot holes in it called perforations, and that's basically bullets shooting through the steel case and going into the formation certain distance. Then they will pump water that's directed only to that interval at water and sand and some mystery chemicals at a very high pressure to crack the shale open, because shale was always looked at as a source rock for a sandstone or a limestone. And so they crack the shale open, and then the gas can flow more freely. And sometimes in the Eagle Ford Shale in South Texas, they have a lot of oil and condensate that flows. And then it will flow. So the fracking operation itself in Texas, the chances of it cracking into a freshwater aquifer are basically zero, because you can't propagate a crack 8,000 feet through different formations. The laws of physics don't allow it. But what the Deepwater Horizon incident taught us is your weak spot is your well bore, that hole you've drilled in that 8,000 feet of rock. That's your weak spot. So you have to make sure you have equipment in place that can handle it. Make sure you have redundant equipment that can prevent those pressures from coming back up the wellbore. Because you don't want that fracking fluid to somehow migrate back up the wellbore and get into the freshwater aquifer through the wellbore. So that's where the Railroad Commission needs to triply check and make sure that it has the proper systems and redundant systems in place when they're drilling these wells to keep the freshwater aquifer isolated and away from anything bad. Here's your biggest weak spot, though. Once this frack fluid, as they call it, once it returns to the surface, because after they release the pressure, it'll flow back to the surface, and then some will come back as it starts producing the gas. Once it's back to the surface, it's full of salt. It's very contaminated with chlorides and other things, too, that have come out of the formation. They have to dispose of it. They usually truck it to a disposal well. Sometimes they send it by pipeline. The pipelines that send it to disposal wells are not inspected because they don't have hydrocarbons in them. That needs to be changed, and those need to be inspected. The handling of the water on the surface with the trucks, that's your biggest source and likelihood of having a spill, is have a surface water spill, so it'll get in a creek, kill all the fish. It could go into a local water supply. That's a danger. So those are the areas where the Railroad Commission needs to focus its attention and regulation, and it has just looked away. The Railroad Commissioners have not directed their field personnel to get out there and make sure that the operations are being done properly and correctly. One of the things that I have proposed is have the Railroad Commission commission a study quickly and start looking into requiring on-site reclamation of this water to eliminate some of the chlorides, to get it down where they can use that water on the next fracking job. Because that's another issue, is not just water disposal, but water usage. Every fracking job, every well that's drilled, will use 3 to 5 million gallons of fresh water. And when that water comes back, it's contaminated. Let's look at trying to reclaim that water, and they can. There's technology out there that does it. David Burnett up at Texas A&M in their petroleum engineering department has mobile units that can do it on the site. Let's look into, look, maybe we need to require that. Maybe we need to mandate that and have the operators pay for that to where they reclaim the water and use it on the next well.
Are there any other dangers associated with fracking? Again, I absorb this sort of by osmosis rather than by deep reading.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I've heard of things like the risk of actually localized earthquakes or the sinkhole that we saw in Dayzetta. Are any of these things...
The earthquakes were more a result of, and what has been determined up there, they had earthquakes around Cleburne, Texas, in Johnson County, and the southern end of DFW Airport. And they determined that the most likely cause of that were these injection wells. I think it was Chesapeake had decided to put a couple of injection wells where they dispose of this fluid once it comes back out, and they were injecting right into a fault line or right near a fault line. And as the SMU geophone team put out listening devices out there, they detected an earthquake, and it was happening right near a fault line that was right near the injection point of one of these wells. When they stopped injecting, the earthquake stopped. It's, you know, the Emerson said, we all learn geology the day after the earthquake.
Right.
Unfortunately, this was one of those also. So that is something that you have to make sure that the permitting process for these injection wells takes into account in the technical analysis whether there's a nearby fault zone. And to make sure, if it's near one, say no. That's a bad place to inject that and to inject that fluid, because that builds in pressure in an area that is prone for the fault for the two bodies of land or the bodies of earth to slip, and that, you know, that's what a faulting is. There's a lot of concern about natural gas migrating into the freshwater aquifers. Get more field inspectors. That's where that boils back to that. Get more field inspectors so that when you're setting that surface casing, that casing that is put into place to protect your freshwater aquifers, that they have an inspector making sure that it's done properly and it's done the right way to protect the freshwater. That way, the gas doesn't have a route to migrate into the freshwater, and you've sealed it off well and completely. You also need, and there's a huge thing around this state, these old abandoned wells. They're all over the place. And some have sat there 50, 60, 80 years, and many of them aren't plugged yet. And so you don't have the cement in place to really plug it off and seal it off. And when you don't have that, this old casing that sat there 80 years, and those old cement jobs, well, it fails. And so that's how this old gas in a well can migrate into your fresh water. And that's one of the things we have to preserve our fresh water. It's our most important resource in this state.
All right. And wrap things up. The seat you're running for is currently held by Victor Carrillo. He was defeated in the Republican primary by a gentleman named David Porter. When people go to vote in this election, why should they vote for you and not for your opponent?
I have actual experience in the industry. I worked offshore to pay for college. I was hurt when I was working offshore. I was a landman with Shell. I've been an energy litigation attorney for 20 years. This is the oil and gas business is what I do. I'm third generation in my family to work in this business. My son's a petroleum engineer. It's what we do in my family. And that is critical with the Railroad Commission because, once again, you have to know what you're regulating before you can regulate it. If you're just sitting there, and my opponent was asked, what do you plan to do when you get on the commission? And he said, I'm going to listen to the other two commissioners because I won't know. I don't have any plans or any ideas. And I think that's absolutely the wrong approach. And that being a wrong approach is really borne out by the fact that the legislature moved up the Railroad Commission's sunset to where it's happening right now. They're reviewing it now as whether they're going to keep it in existence, in large part because our current commissioners aren't doing anything. And so the legislature, led by the Republicans, have looked at it and gone, you're not doing anything. You're not doing your job. And so we're going to look at maybe just shutting this whole thing down. We didn't even talk about benzene and other air emissions, but that's another huge issue where the three commissioners have just thrown their hands up and said, we're not doing anything. I have specific plans. I've come out. And that's why people should vote for me. I have specific plans and specific approaches that I want to take on the commission. I've been glad to share them with anyone who cares to listen because it is the Railroad Commission. It's not a sexy office at all. It's a very much a meat and potatoes office in this state, but it is a critically important thing, and the last thing we need is someone who's going to just mimic the other railroad commissioners and have no new ideas and nothing new on the commission.
All right. Jeff Williams, thank you very much for speaking to me today.
Thank you. Appreciate it.